It's after 6 a.m. when I wake up. The air is filled with a shower of bird calls. The birds flit busily from branch to branch, calling out to each other in piercing chirps. Their message has none of the deep echo and hidden implications of those the night before. When I pull back the curtains, every bit of last night's darkness has disappeared from around the cabin. Everything sparkles in a newborn golden glow. I light the stove, boil some mineral water, and make a cup of chamomile tea, then open a box of crackers and have a few with cheese. After that, I brush my teeth at the sink and wash my face. I pull on a wind cheater over my yachting parka and go outside. The morning light pours down through the tall trees onto the open space in front of the cabin. Sunbeams everywhere and mist floating like freshly minted souls. The pure, clean air pierces my lungs with each breath. I sit down on a porch step and watch the birds scudding from tree to tree, listening to their calls. Most of them move about in pairs, constantly checking to see where their partner is, screeching out to keep in touch. I follow the sound of the water and find the stream right away close by. Rocks form a kind of pool where the water flows in, swirling around in a maze of eddies before rushing back out to rejoin the stream. The water is clear and beautiful. I scoop some up to drink. It's cold and delicious, and then hold my hands in the current. Back at the cabin, I cook ham and eggs in the frying pan, make some toast using a metal net, and heat milk in a small pan to wash down my meal. After eating, I haul a chair out to the porch, prop my legs up on the railing, and spend the morning reading. Oshima's bookshelf is crammed full of books. Only a few are novels, chiefly classics. Mostly, they're books on philosophy, sociology, history, geography, natural sciences, economics, a huge number of subjects, a random selection of fields. Oshima said he'd hardly attended school at all, so this must have been how he got his education. I pick out a book on the trial of Adolf Eichmann. I have a vague notion of him as a Nazi war criminal, but no special interest in the guy. The book just happens to catch my eye, that's all. I start to read and learn how this totally practical lieutenant colonel in the SS, with his metal-framed glasses and thinning hair, was, soon after the war started, assigned by Nazi headquarters to design a final solution for the Jews. Extermination, that is. And how he investigated the best ways of actually carrying this out. Apparently, it scarcely crossed his mind to question the morality of what he was doing. All he cared about was how best, in the shortest period of time, and for the lowest possible cost, to dispose of the Jews. And we're talking about the 11 million Jews he thought needed to be eliminated in Europe. Eichmann studied how many Jews could be packed into each railway carriage, what percentage would die of natural causes while being transported, the minimum number of people needed to keep this operation going, the cheapest method of disposing of the dead bodies, burning, or burying, or dissolving them. Seated at his desk, Eichmann pored over all these numbers. Once he put it into operation, everything went pretty much according to plan. By the end of the war, some 6 million Jews had been disposed of. Strangely, the guy never felt any remorse. Sitting in court in Tel Aviv, behind bulletproof glass, Eichmann looked like he couldn't for the life of him work out why he was being tried, or why the eyes of the world were upon him. He was just a technician, he insisted, who'd found the most efficient solution to the problem assigned him. Wasn't he doing what any good bureaucrat would do? So why was he being singled out and accused?